So welcome to our second interview on imposter syndrome. This is James Routledge. He helps run a company called Sanctus. And he's here to talk about why he stepped down as CEO of that organization after becoming very successful. And hopefully will tell us about his journey through his career, but also the kind of reasons for doing that and what prompted the decision to disclose really so openly. So James, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about your career?
Yeah, hey everyone. My name's James. I'm the, as Ruth said, I'm the founder of Sanctus. We're a mental health business on a mission to inspire people to work on their mental health like we do our physical health. So our vision is to completely normalize mental health and make it something that's part of our daily life and accepted in our society. And it's a sort of, it's an exciting concept, not just a scary one, which is how mental health is probably currently viewed. We partner with companies to help change their culture around mental health, and we create safe spaces in businesses for people to talk to someone about their mental health as well. I started the business, 5 years ago now, after my own experiences with mental health. So I was born out of my own frustration and problems with finding support for my own mental health. I just had no idea where to go, what to do, how I was feeling was okay or right or normal. And I just felt completely alone with it. So I wanted to start a movement more than anything, really, that that sort of changed that, basically. And I see Sanctus as part of a big societal movement that's happening that we're one part of. And then business has gone well. We've got lots of brilliant partners, brilliant customers that provide mental health support to their employees with Sanctus, from Red Bull to Boston Consulting Group to Just Eat and lots of other businesses in between. We've got 40 Sanctus coaches, and we coach about probably about over 1,000 people every month access Sanctus at work. And then throughout that, I suppose to bring it into this topic, I have continued to go on my own mental health journey throughout, right? You know, I probably naively expected that by founding a mental health business, my mental health would be cured or healed once and for all, which certainly hasn't been the case. And particularly as the business has grown and I moved into a leadership role and a CEO role, and all of the responsibility that comes with that, I found that quite difficult and ended up making the decision to step down as CEO and bring in a CEO for Sanctus, which was quite a bold move and one that I'm beginning to be really proud of.
No, I think you should, because when I saw you initially post about your decision to step down, and I've followed Sanctus for quite a few years because of my mental health conditions myself, I was really impressed that you were very eloquent, that it was about not feeling like a traditional leader and not wanting to have to create an image around yourself all the time. So I wondered, when you made that decision, did you look at it as being something connected to imposter syndrome, or just feeling out of place in your role, or is it more sort of broad brush than that when you were thinking of it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I pinned it onto imposter syndrome as a catch-all phrase. Mm-hmm. I'm someone that resists labels sort of, you know, a condition or a diagnosis that, mm-hmm. and that says something about me. I try and wriggle away from them. So I certainly wouldn't be the kind of person to say something like, I have imposter syndrome, as if it's something I've got. Although, and this is semantics, I certainly felt like an imposter a lot of times in that role, because it was, you know, when you start a business, well, for me, I started a business, but I didn't necessarily want to run a business. Mm-hmm. So the very two very different distinct acts. One is you know, it's a real founding, pioneering, creative experience mm-hmm. of, I just want this thing to exist and I'm going to will it into life, whatever it needs. Then once the business matures a little bit, it's then a very different experience of nurturing, growing, managing, strategy, performance, people, management, loads of different skills that I knew were really important for the business, but wasn't enjoying, basically. Yeah. So there was two parts of it. There was one, I was doing stuff that I wasn't enjoying. It just wasn't filling me up. And then secondly, that I would put more closely to something you might call imposter syndrome, feeling like I had to do it, basically. Yeah. So feeling like I had to put on a bit of a show and I had to play a role that wasn't necessarily authentic to me.
Yeah.
And I sort of toyed with it for a while because there was definitely a period where I didn't feel good enough to lead.
Okay.
Where I really doubted my ability to lead a business and to, you know, set the direction and to be directive and to also listen to people and bring people up. So there definitely was a period where my confidence was quite low. But I actually moved through that through coaching and through therapy and just a bit of experience. Yet, even when I moved through it, I was still like, well, I actually don't want to do this.
No. I think the image of the CEO is kind of aspirational to many people, but the reality of actually holding that post is very different. And I know from leading and managing a relatively big team of 50 people that you suddenly walk into the coffee area and everyone stops speaking. There's those kind of indicators that you're now in a leadership role. But there's also the emotional strain of, well, I found this, the emotional strain of being present for everybody there and being able to adjust your leadership style according to the person in front of you. And I love developing people. It's one of my passions, really. But the strain for me, mental health wise, of having a consistent and sort of regulated approach within the organizations I've worked with has proved quite hard. Because if you're on a down day, it's very hard to deliver what the person in front of you needs. And actually, you may be able to do it in my experience, but it's when you get home, it takes a toll. And that's kind of my impression of your description of what you had.
Yeah, I felt I was given a lot, basically. I felt I was given a lot and given a lot of myself. And because I wasn't filled up by that job, I wasn't getting much back. Mm. So it was a very draining position to be in. I mean, now I know a lot of founders and people who start businesses who grow and develop into CEOs, and they absolutely love it. They love developing people. Yeah. They get excited by it. They want to grow and they want to go in that direction, which is great. I just didn't want to grow in that direction. Mm. For a long time, I had a lot of what I'm about to say. I felt guilty and embarrassed to say what I'm about to say, which is I don't really enjoy managing people at all.
It's hard.
It's hard. Yes. I was actually probably pretty good at it and perfectly capable. I don't enjoy it. Mm. It's as simple as that. And like, there's nothing wrong with saying you don't enjoy something. No. It doesn't mean I don't like people or I don't think management's important or I don't care about it. I do. I just don't want to do it. No. I don't enjoy, you know, checking in with someone.
The day-to-day function or something.
I don't enjoy it at all. You just give me nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't feel confident enough to admit that for a while. And now I'm like, well, yeah, that's just me. Like, I don't enjoy doing that.
Well, you've inspired me simply by forming the organisation and being open about both your mental health and being honest about where your organisation's been at. The reason I say that is it's made me post very honest and kind of open blogs about my own situation. And I don't think I would have done that without something like Sanctus being around alongside Prince William and Kate. With heads together. It's those kind of things which inspire people like me to be open about their condition. And I thank you for that, really. And on that kind of obsequious note, I'm going to move to Katie and Simon.
So I guess, yeah, we can dive into the topic a bit more. And I think a good starting point is, I guess, to tackle what imposter syndrome is, because it means different things for everyone. So for me, it's that I keep waiting for someone to find me out and tell me I'm not good enough. And, you know, there's the door, or looking around at people that have maybe that I feel have better capabilities. So in your own words, how would you describe kind of what imposter syndrome is for you?
For me, the closest I've sort of felt to imposter syndrome, and maybe, you know, sort of everyone will have their own relationship to that term, won't they, is in a leadership role, is I definitely had a period of, I kind of like gave away my power in a way. Like I believed that other people knew more than me or knew what was right. So I was paralyzed in making decisions that even if in my gut they were really strong and I was in the position to make them, I didn't feel confident enough or able to to make them. So for example, a good example is, you know, Sanctus is a mental health business. And we've got psychotherapists, coaches, people in the mental health profession. And if we were making a decision and there was a level of challenge, which there often is when you're in a leadership position, someone challenges a decision or offers an alternate point of view, I didn't feel able to say, like, I hear that, you know, and we're going in this direction. And that's because deep down I felt like I didn't know enough, or I shouldn't be running a mental health business because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a coach, I don't have the credentials, I don't have the skills. So I've felt like an imposter in mental health because I don't have some initials after my name, ultimately. And I'm not at my age also. I'm young, I'm 29. I just don't have maybe the authority that just being an older man in particular often gets you for free. So yeah, and actually, gosh, now you've asked me, I'm getting there now. I'm writing a book, which is very relevant. I'm writing a book with Penguin on mental health at work. And I mean, that has just been an absolute test of imposter syndrome, because the whole first chapter of me introducing myself, you know, I battled with like, why me? You know, what do I have to say? Like, what gives me the right to be writing this? So I definitely at times like lost touch with, I keep calling it my power, I don't know what that means, but I lost touch with you know, my essence or what's kind of special about me. And you know, everyone's got that thing that is special and unique to them. So that's where I'd say I've definitely felt it. And what it is for me, it's like a lack of confidence, basically, like a lack of confidence in me and not feeling good enough to be in a room or to be doing what I'm doing. I've not had that feeling like that you stated of like, oh, I'm going to get found out. And I've heard people say that before, as if someone's like going to catch them. I don't experience it like that, but I've definitely experienced a quieter, like reflective, you know, inner critic voice of like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, like you're not good enough to do this, or like this isn't right, or in some way.
Yeah,
sounds, without wanting to put words in your mouth at all, but it sounds like a focus or emphasis on the things you can't do rather than things you can do.
Yeah, and that's a really good spot. It's definitely a sort of when I've been in those places, it's definitely a jump to the negative straight away. It's like a focusing on like, yeah, what I can't do, what I'm not good enough, what I'm not good at, what's not right. And often lots of stories in my head of what people might think with no basis. You know, it's like writing my book, for example, I'm writing it, I'm already imagining what someone who I've never met is going to say, right? Or I'm putting stories in that are fictitious. And they might be based on a fear of mine, but ultimately they're just thoughts. They are fictitious.
And I think that kind of moves on really nicely to the next question, which is kind of experiencing these feelings and having them drive changes, whether, you know, it's stepping down and doing something different, or, you know, opening eyes to what you do enjoy and don't enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. As someone who was in a position of leadership, so running a company and being a CEO, were there any changes that you thought or put in place that might actually help others who were trying to tackle and overcome these feelings? So within the workplace that you were overseeing?
I think the most important thing I did was just start opening up about it in places that I felt safe. So I never got to the point really where I felt able to be truly vulnerable with the team. And, you know, still part of me regrets that. I think I would have liked to be able to be more honest in the moment with my team and the company. We're only a small business. I just didn't feel able to. Is the truth? So I would have liked to have been able to do that. That's a lot to ask though of the team. You know, in a startup environment, it's already can be quite high stress and high pressure. It's new, so for me to then put onto the plate of our team to, you know, say the CEO is struggling and not enjoying his job and he doesn't know what to do about it, would have been like an added amount of uncertainty that I didn't feel comfortable passing on to people, even though I might have got value out of opening up in that way. So in the end, what really supported me was opening up to people that I felt like I could, both personally and professionally. So more personally, in coaching, for example. So I had a coach throughout. That was a brilliant space that was just for me, that I could work through my challenges with. And then more professionally, you know, I just found people that either were in similar positions to me or had been. So other founders in my example that had felt the same, had not enjoyed what they were doing. And just, again, that was just a real relief of like not feeling alone and not feeling like I was crazy. And then also finding like the closest I've found to like a manager. You know, when you're a CEO or you're founder, you don't have a manager. So there's no one really there. So, you know, in the end, I reached out to one of our investors, who's someone I really respect and look up to and a real role model for me. And I mean, he's not officially my manager because I don't have one, but I could reach out to him and I could ask for help and say, look, like, and he just gave me so much perspective and just kind of gave a bit of an arm on the arm around the shoulder in a way, really, and just sort of made me aware that this is okay. Like, this is it was like a normal thing. And that was really helpful. So finding those spaces where I could be understood and open up in a sort of safe way was really important for me.
I always think of that as being a kind of decompression valve. So most counsellors have a sponsor or a, you know, somebody they talk to when they've heard difficult stories from people. And what I always found in my role was there would always be someone who has experienced either a bereavement or an illness or, you know, something that's hard to listen to that's going on. And that can be one of the biggest challenges, I think, of being a leader, is you've got nobody to decompress to yourself necessarily.
Yeah.
So completely understandable. Simon, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Oh, well, I've got a couple of questions, but I think Katie probably hasn't finished.
Yeah, I've got one more, if that's okay.
Sorry, Katie.
That's okay. thinking about imposter syndrome, and I think, you know, we talk about it a lot, imposter syndrome amongst women. So I have regular conversations with other women in positions of leadership about how we feel. So it's kind of the opening up. So what you said about opening up is incredibly important, I think, especially for early career, so that people coming into employment can see that these conversations are happening and that even in leadership, people do suffer from imposter syndrome. It doesn't just go away. But if you could offer some advice, a few tips to anyone who might be starting out their career on either how they could avoid the sense of inadequacy that comes with imposter syndrome or how they could turn it into a positive, what would be some of the advice you would offer?
Yeah, great question. And in the question and then how you framed it, I mean, just to touch on, you're absolutely right. I think a lot of people feel like this in a leadership position. And it's a really good thing. I think it says a lot about, you know, your humility, your, you know, sort of empathy and ability to reflect and things. So I think in a way, it says a lot of positives about someone. And age is a big factor of it. And then, I mean, look, I'm a white man, so I haven't experienced other forms of like discrimination. I just have it, like, or, you know, for me, I'm in this sort of position of privilege where actually for the most time I feel like I can do anything, is the truth. Like, I've got, like, that's how I've been brought up in a way. So I just think it's really important for people to kind of find their tribe. And just, like, for me, that was other founders that looked like me and had experiences like me and sounded like me. Whereas if you're, you know, let's say you're, you know, early to late 20s and you're moving into a managerial role for the first time, like, connecting with your friends or people in your workplace who are also going on that same path is going to be so important, because the hardest part of all of this, and this is just mental health full stop, is just feeling like you're alone. And actually, once you have that shared experience of, like, oh, it's not just me, the relief that comes with that, that's kind of half the battle. Because what's really tough in mental health full stop is experiencing something that's hard enough as it is. So if you're feeling anxious or you're feeling depressed or you feel like an imposter, that's hard. Yet to then feel embarrassed that you feel like that is like a double whammy. That's like, that makes it even harder. So anything you can do to relieve yourself and connect with others who might be going through the same thing, I think is incredibly valuable. So that could be friends, colleagues, whatever. And then the other thing that, you know, I'd offer, and I think this is just, I think we're getting to the point where to just be a functioning human, you need this in today's world, is just finding a safe space for yourself, whatever that is. You know, if that safe space is therapy, coaching, journaling, walking, whatever that space is that fills you up and supports you. You know, people call it a self-care routine, other people call it working on your mental health, whatever you want to call it, well-being, wellness, don't care. You know, looking after yourself fundamentally is just vital. I think, you know, in the time we're living in right now, you know, it's just as important as brushing your teeth. I mean, you have to have some form of routine, I think, for your mental health, basically. whatever that is. And there's no judgment on that. You know, there's no right or wrong. Doesn't have to. Everyone doesn't have to go to therapy. You know, I think that'd be great personally. But, you know, whatever it is, if it's meditation, if it's yoga, just find it, basically.
So the thing that has occurred to me over lockdown has been that friendship is massively underrated, particularly friendship in a work environment. And that seems to be what most people are missing above everything. And so one of the things that you kind of commented on was that imposter syndrome has kind of made you feel isolated and unable to confide. And I wonder how we can improve that in different organizations. And see what you're, you know, what you think, really.
Yeah, I think, I mean, an organization isn't responsible for how people feel. It's got a duty of care to create an environment where people can express how they feel. Yeah, it's not the job of a company, in my opinion, to make sure to make everyone happy. That's an impossible task. It can't happen. And that might be tough for people to hear, but it's not. How you feel is your responsibility. Now, work can create an incredible amount of stress and unease and distress in the environment that is created. Now, that is the responsibility of leadership. So what leadership can do, which is who we're talking about really when we're talking about a business, we're talking about a group of people that sit in a room and are responsible for how the company behaves and acts and role models. What that group of people can do is role model behaviors that create the conditions for people to feel able to say, I feel like an imposter in this room, or to say, I feel upset or I feel sad or whatever that feeling is. So I think organizations, and in particular leadership, can do more to just create permission for vulnerability. That's what I think leadership can do. More practically, you know, you can create trainings for managers that, you know, that target young managers and give them support they need, and you can put people in peer groups, loads of practicalities. I don't know them all because every business is different. However, it's got to start right from the top where, you know, the people accountable for running the company, they've got to care, and then two, they have to show up in a way that's conducive to healthy behavior.
I think that's really interesting. So I was about to ask the question, how do you think COVID-19 has affected all this thinking about people at work? But I feel like you've covered that pretty well. And I think Ruth just asked it, so I won't ask that. instead, what I'm going to ask is actually just going back to the imposter syndrome theme. One thing that fascinates me in terms of overcoming imposter syndrome is that for somebody who talked quite eloquently there about what imposter syndrome means for you, you did something pretty bold, which is start your own company. And so I guess I wanted to ask you about how you have defeated at various stages of your life the kind of focus on what you can't do in order to do some pretty bold stuff and just get on with doing it anyway, whether that's forming your own company or it's hiring a CEO or it's expanding, you know, as rapidly as you have been doing. Because clearly this is something that, whilst it's clearly been a part of your life, hasn't stopped you from doing some pretty big and bold things. So I think it might be great to hear just kind of how you've managed to overcome that in order to still achieve and progress and do.
Yeah, it's an absolute cracker, that one. as soon as you started asking that, I was smiling because it's a great observation. You know, in the last year, I've opened up about this transition from, you know, I didn't feel comfortable as a CEO. I found it really difficult. That's all true, by the way. No, it wasn't some PR spin, right? That was like, it was a tough 18 months for me. Really difficult 18 months. Like, you know, I had my first experience with mental health where anxiety, panic attacks, and that was hard. And then the period that I've talked about recently as a CEO was very different. I was depressed, I think, really. Like, I didn't want to get out of bed. I just had no energy. I was just like a zombie. You know, I was just tired and just really shot with my confidence, as I've already talked about. Yet, when you then talk about the impetus to start a business and the ability to start something, I don't feel any imposter syndrome there at all. Like, at all. Like, if you said to me, like, James, do you think Sanctus can be like the Nike of mental health and, you know, an iconic mental health brand in the next 10, 20 years? I'm like, absolutely. In fact, I'm not even like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, yeah, it will be. So it's then like my confidence goes off the charts arguably into like delusional levels of confidence, but that's for another day. But when it comes to, starting or building a business, I never doubted myself for a second. I dropped out of university to start my first business. And whilst that was a difficult experience in the end, I never questioned whether I could do that. It felt innate again that I could. I was like, I just didn't even doubt it. And same with Sanctus. Like, you know, I must admit, with Sanctus, I almost didn't really want to start a business. It was just like, I wrote this blog post, this just movement happened organically, and really pulled into it because of my connection to it and my passion for its mission. But yeah, I never had any doubt that I could start a business, really. Whereas you put me in a room and say, lead this room, like, you know, put me in a room with 10 people in a business that's what, you know, 2 million quid in revenue or whatever, and say, you know, set the direction for this room and tell this group of people what we're going to work on next. And I'm like, I can't do that. Well, and also I don't want to do that, which is where I've got to. So yeah, I think the content matters for me, and the situation and you know, that's been my experience of feeling very different depending on the environment I'm in or the task at hand per se. So when it comes to creating something new or starting something, yeah. And the same, so the book's a great example. So I had the initial should I be doing this? Am I good enough? But I moved through it because I had enough of a voice like, yes, I can, I do deserve to be here. I have, and I was able to move through that. Whereas the CEO is an example. I both wasn't and didn't want to.
So, final question from me. I've been really fascinated in the answers that you've given about the distinction between, you know, not sure about this, but I can move through it, and then really not sure about this and I don't like it and I don't think this is for me. I think for all of us, whatever our career and whatever stage of our career we might be in, there is a certain amount of learning, and we're all in positions where maybe we start new jobs or we get new responsibilities and we don't quite feel up to the task. And I guess what I wanted to ask you is, how would you distinguish the one from the other? So the one where you take on new responsibilities and you're like, I'm feeling pretty overwhelmed by this, but you move through it and it's okay, versus the one where you take it on and you're feeling overwhelmed by it and you realize it's not for you. At kind of what point did you realize the CEO role wasn't for you? And what other signs do you think other people should look out for, either to stick with what they're doing, because actually it's the right thing, they just need to kind of get through the learning process, or actually they need to change direction because, you know, this really just isn't a good fit for them in terms of their mental health, what they want to do, yeah. etc.
I mean, honestly, for me, that was the question. Genuinely, like, I'm not just saying that was the question that plagued me for ages. It was, am I shying away from this because it's hard and because I don't think I'm good enough and I'm scared? If that's the case, I get a coach, I grow, I learn, I read books, I persevere, and I achieve something brilliant at the end of it. Or is there a fundamental misalignment where I just don't want to be doing this? It's not filling me up. And I sat on the edge of that for months because I didn't want to bottle it, I didn't want to run away. I wasn't sure. I was like, you know, is this because I don't think I can? And that's actually what a lot of other people read into it. So when I did open up to a few people, that a lot of other people would say to me, oh, but James, you're really good. You can do this. You're just doubting yourself. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I am. I'm just doubting myself. And I'd go back in and I'd like build myself up and I'd go again. And then just over time, the what I had to accept is I don't want to do this. And that, like, when I let that drop and I accepted that, I felt such a relief.
And I suppose that has to be balanced with something you do want to do instead, right? Because obviously we all have days where we're just like, don't fancy work today.
Yeah, yeah.
But it sounds for you, it was more like, I don't want to do this, but I want to focus on this other thing instead. Is that fair? Or
you're completely fair. Sorry, I'm just like, you're absolutely nailing it. It's like, so that was then the second part of the paralysis, because I've accepted, okay, it's not that I can't do this, it's that I don't want to, right? Brilliant place to get to, right? A little bit of relief. Then, well, okay, what then? And the answer to that was, I don't know. And that is very frightening. And I had some ideas. I'm like, oh, I've got this book deal and I've always wanted to do this mental health gym thing. But I didn't know. And it was the darkness. So to then step into the unknown, and people go through this all the time with career changes, all the time. It's like, and people always say, and I'll say to people, oh, just quit your job. Just quit your job then. I do it all the time. Like people, yeah, it's very, very annoying. But it's not that easy, because that is frightening, right? And look, you've got all the, you know, can you afford to do that? All of that sort of stuff. And that was in the mix for me as well, by the way. I couldn't afford to, like, I still work at Sanctus full time, right? It's still I've stepped down as CEO, but I'm still there. The thought of actually, I couldn't have just quit. I couldn't afford to do that financially. So yeah, that the two points you've made about, is this something I can't do because I'm scared, or something I don't want to do because it's not aligned? That was the question for me. And then secondly, if it's something I don't want to do, well, what next? And if the answer to that is I don't know, that was very paralyzing for me, because I was very scared of the unknown, of just stepping out into total uncertainty, because it felt like, where will this go? Like, I was literally like, will I leave Sanctus? Will I want to like not be an entrepreneur? Will I want to go and be a primary school teacher? Or, you know, just like had absolutely no idea. So it's very frightening. And in the end, on reflection, I can say with hindsight, that's what I was avoiding. That uncertainty is what I was avoiding.
So that's really interesting. I think a great end in a way. So I do want to thank you for your time. I'm conscious that we're running short of time now. But I also want to just ask you whether you think in the cycle of life, given that you are late 20s, whether you think being a CEO in later life might actually resonate with you as being something you'd want to do again. And I know that's like predicting the future, so kind of difficult, but.
So I mentioned one of our investors who I look up to, and it was a really important series of conversations along the way. At one point, we had a conversation, and he just said, "James, how old are you?" And I was like, "I'm 29," and he burst out laughing. He just burst out laughing. He was just like, he literally said, "You know, mate, if you want to be a CEO, you can do it in your 40s." And I was just like, I was just like, oh, you know, it felt like I was making these decisions for the rest of my life, and they were all so big. And then I just woke up. I was like, I'm 29. Like, you know, there's so much life experience I've not got, you know, kids, marriage, owning a home, all these sort of rituals in a way that I've just not been through. So possibly, I don't know.
You never know. So they say in Buddhism, nothing is permanent. So you never know.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows? And I'm okay with that.
And that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was great. Really
send
good.
You the final cut. Thanks.
Yeah, please do.
Right.